Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bentinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bentinelli.
I have radio voice, you said.
You do.
Well, you know why I do that?
Why?
I intentionally lower my voice to start because when years ago when I used to work at a Christian bookstore, in customer service, I would answer the phone. Hello, you've called Whittemore's. How may I help you? That I would often get people saying, yes, miss, can you tell me? Can you believe people used to think my voice sounded like a woman's voice?
Maybe you had a not as deep a voice when you were younger.
I don't think I was that much different. I think I've intentionally lowered my voice as I've gotten older to make sure that I don't sound like a woman.
I see.
Although these days. but that's not what we're talking about tonight.
Okay, then.
I get random thoughts as I read the intro.
I can kind of tell, like, if I'm passing by the office door, if you're actually recording, because you have a recording voice that's different from your, like, chatting voice.
Yes, and then you, what did you say? I was reading to the kids, and you said it was Dungeons & Dragons. You said I was doing it in my...
Oh my gosh,
voice.
You were. It was so loud. I was trying to like cook and I couldn't even hear myself think like to follow the recipe because you were doing the voice.
I kind of yell in the podcast. See, I've got a limiter that it's got a top end limiter. So I could scream into the microphone and it will only go so loud in the recording. But I do recognize that I kind of like on certain podcasts, especially like Secrets of Tech, I kind of talk loud.
Why?
I don't know why. I am all excited, you know. Hey, da, 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 and but you and what do you think about the new phone? And isn't that awesome? You know, like I put more energy into it.
Yeah, you get kind of a little excited.
I get excited. I put energy. Like, but by Sunday night, folks, you get the dregs of my energy.
It's been a day. It's been a week.
It's been a week. So let's talk about today. Speaking of low energy, Anthony's Weebelo's den. Which I am the den leader of. We had our Weebelo's walkabout. We went for a hike. We went to the same place that you went a few weeks ago, the pond, Punkabug Pond.
Was that a few weeks ago? It feels like an eternity ago.
It was earlier this fall. It was not August. It was September, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, so like last month?
Yeah, I could look through the podcast episodes,
yeah,
but
okay.
It's something like that. And so... We chose it, I chose it, because it's a nice, easy, relatively easy hike. It's relatively flat, although there are areas where it goes up, as my ankles will attest. I need hiking shoes. And so it worked out pretty well. So it's a couple-hour hike around. It's 4 miles. Weather was perfect because it was overcast, so it wasn't too sunny. It wasn't raining. It was and it was like around 50, which makes it not too cold, not too warm. Just right, as they say.
Sweet spot.
So it was, yeah, everyone agreed it was good. And frankly, some of the parents were like, man, we ought to do this more often. This was a lot of fun. Like, they enjoyed it. The parents enjoyed it. The kids, basically, like the boys, would just bolt off down the trail ahead of us. And, you know, and then eventually they'd come to a crossroads and stop, thankfully.
The nice thing about that walking trail is that there are a lot of like places where you really can't, like you have to kind of stop and calculate where you're going.
Yeah. Oh, I did take a wrong turn once.
There's a natural sort of limitation on how far ahead they can get.
Yeah. There's a point where you're supposed to turn to the right and go down a hill. But if you go straight, you end up in the cabins.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Because you guys went there once before.
Yes. Well, one of the times we actually did the deliberate detour through the cabins.
Yeah.
Because they were thinking about camping there.
Man, I can't just, you know, the camping thing, you know, I just, well, I'll get to that in a second. So the walk around was really nice. I spent some time, most of the time I was walking with one of the dads, John, And he was telling, we was trading stories about bad weather experiences like storms and the recent storms and getting caught in floods and we don't call them derechos around here, but people call them microbursts. They're probably different weather phenomena, but they're, you know, high winds and lots of rain things where that knock down trees. So we were talking a lot about that. And then we talked about podcasts and how about he'd like to start a podcast. He's thinking of doing a music podcast because he has lots of music knowledge. And so I was giving him a little bit of advice on, just in some of the technicalities, like where you're going to encounter some difficulties and some tricks like that. I mean, podcasting is not, it's not rocket science, but there are, if you want to do it right, like everything, you want to do it right, there are certain things that it goes beyond having a microphone and having knowing how to upload and that sort of stuff. There's a certain amount of having a voice and having something to say and saying it in such a way. I recommended the How Music Does That podcast to him.
Oh, cool. That's one of my favorites.
Yes. If you want to know about music, that's the one.
He's been quiet recently, but...
Yeah. So the other thing that we've been doing lately is preparing for a scout camp out. So the girls' troop and Ben's troop are preparing. They're both troops, the boys' troop and the girls' troop, are preparing to go to the same camp at the same time. But there's of course a separation that has to be maintained due to the COVID rules and all that sort of stuff. Right. So
it's sort of a camping alongside.
Yeah, I mean, the campsites are going to be next to each other, so we're going to have to people will from the campground will come through, and you know the scout camp will come through, and you know they're going to make sure we're abiding by the special rules and all that sort of stuff. But you know the bottom line is we'll be near each other, so I'll be close enough to be there near Ben, and Anthony's coming along as younger sibling. And then I'll be also near the girls. So we'll see how that goes. I'll be in the tent with the girls, though, with Bella and Sophie.
You'll be in the tent with the girls.
Yeah, Bella, Sophie, actually, and Anthony has to be in that tent, too, because he's not officially.
So Ben will be in a tent by himself?
Yeah. I'm not sure he knows that. We may have to sneak Anthony over.
Because
all the boys have to tent by themselves because of the separation rules. They can't be in a tent together.
But no, I mean, that doesn't count for like siblings.
Except for siblings, right? Families can tent together. So, I mean, technically we could have Ben in our tent too, but I think he wants to be with the boys troop.
Right.
But he's loving that. He's loving Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Boy Scouts is,
I mean, it's, what was he telling you before?
At bedtime I went to tuck him in and he was saying, he was excitedly exclaiming that he has a scout meeting tomorrow. I said, oh, I'm so glad you like your scout meetings. And he says, I don't like my scout meetings. I love my scout meetings. So, yeah, Boy Scouts, big hit. He liked Cub Scouts, but he loves Boy Scouts.
And you were saying you think it's because it's less raucous.
I think that's one of the factors is that the Cubs can be, well, wild. They're yes. They're younger boys, and I think the Boy Scouts are older boys. I mean, there are a few boys that are younger than Ben, but by and large, they're mostly older than him. And so I think that there is a sort of a mellowing process. Like the younger boys tend to follow the lead of the older boys, and probably, I mean, I haven't like been there, but I'm imagining that there's a mellowing effect.
There is.
Just knowing how boys act in groups.
Like the senior patrolier is like 16 or 17, which is like a vast gulf between a 17 or a 16-year-old and an 11-year-old. I mean, there's...
Right, that's a big difference.
Yeah, and so the leadership is by the youth, and the older boys don't... They don't put up with nonsense.
Right, because when you're 16, like that stuff just doesn't appeal anymore.
Right. So they enact the discipline. They keep them going. And the nice thing is like I drop Ben off and come home. He's there by himself. And so it means that he's been able to really make this transition to wanting to do things on his own without having the crutch of having mom or dad there, which is...
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Which is nice. It's really good. And, you know, the same would be true of Bella and by extension, Sophie, except it's just such a hike over to where their troop meets that it doesn't make sense for me to come all the way home and then go all the way back. So I just hang out. And plus, I'm the treasurer for the troop, so I can meet with the scoutmaster and that sort of stuff. But...
But they're still running the meetings.
Yes. Stuff.
They're not.
I'm off on the side on my iPad work, writing or something like that, or reading a book. I'm not interacting with their event. So Bella, what was it? 2 years ago, she was off doing her role playing camp thing.
Right.
I mean, she's.
I can't believe that was 2 years ago.
Yeah. I think it was. So and then the other thing that, of course, as you are probably listening to this, Halloween is right around the corner and or has passed, depending on how quickly you've listened to the episode. I'm sort of assuming that you listen as soon as it comes out. Yeah. But it's this year, obviously, Halloween is vastly different and everybody's situation in every different town is weird. So we've been trying to figure out what we're going to do here, because our town has recommended against trick-or-treating, but they haven't banned it, and they've said if you do go trick-or-treating, here's what you do, and here's what you should do, X, Y, and Z. And I know a lot of the parents around town have been saying, we're trick-or-treating, this is, we got to give the kids this normalcy or whatever, and they'll be super disappointed. So
honestly, I just don't see trick-or-treating as being a super high-risk event. If they can't, the kids are going to school 2 days a week, and if they can go to scouts wearing masks and stuff, then it seems to me that like 5 seconds at a door or when everyone's wearing a mask,
well, frankly,
is low risk compared to other activities that people are doing.
Many people, like, they open like the inner door and then they have the screen door and they hand like stuff out through the screen door already because it's cold out, because it's the end of October in New England.
Right.
So they're not really exposed. I mean, I suppose as someone handing out candy at the door, if you're doing that, it might be a pain to have to put on your mask, take off your mask, put on your mask, take off your mask. But I don't know. Some people are just putting a bowl outside the door, but I'm not sure. I don't know. I'd love giving the candy to the kids, like handing out candy. But B, I know some kids who will reach in and just empty that bowl into their bag.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was thinking. How many kids would get candy if you put a bowl out?
Right. They would, like, the first three kids come by and the bowl is empty. So, so we're planning on having them go around. So
unless something drastic happens and like the town like last minute bans it, I think we're pretty much leaning towards trick or treating.
I think in normal years, there's probably maybe half of the houses are giving out candy.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more than the half. This year, I expect it to be lower.
Right.
So.
And we get maybe 30 kids or 40 kids. Like, it's not huge numbers. We're not a neighborhood where you get hundreds of kids.
Yeah. Although the number of families with younger kids is growing in our neighborhood. I mean, that's something that's been growing. It's not like when we were in Salem where you'd get, dozens of kids coming through, but it's not bad. It's manageable. The question is how far do I take them around? Cause I assume I'm the one taking them.
They usually vote for you.
Yes, I know. Because I take them further than you do.
Yeah, I get tired easier or something.
Well, I still have flashbacks to when Lucy started to have breathing problems on the far end of the circle, and I had to carry her by the end because she was having a hard time breathing. That was kind of freaked me out.
Yeah, that was not one of our better years.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe we'll go the short circle, like up and then down one of the middle roads to the end of the street and be done with it. And
make sure that people take their inhalers before they go.
Yes. And if they don't get enough candy, there'll be candy on sale or something. Not that we need it, but
I'm sure. Isabella has already insisted that when I buy candy to give out, I get some that they like, just in case nobody comes. Then they can just pillage the candy that
Hope
I usually
springs eternal among the children.
I usually try to get some that we like, but I also tend to get some that we aren't our favorites, so that I'm more generous that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's easy to be generous with something you don't actually want yourself.
So next time you listen to this, you'll have heard how it all went. And I do plan. I think that this year I still want to do Chinese food for my birthday.
You always do Chinese food. I always do for Chinese food.
I know. But like there are options this year. We could get Indian. There's that new Cajun seafood place over in Brockton. But I'll get Indian, because I mean Indian Chinese, because that's just
tradition. Yeah.
Yes. So.
So yeah. While you guys have all been doing your scouting things, I'm staying at home and being quiet.
Well, the camping trip will be interesting because it'll be just you and Lucy here.
Yes.
Poor Lucy.
She is a little bit sad, and then I reminded her that last fall when the big kids all went camping and she and Anthony were here, that we watched some movies and had some like special fun times. And I said, you know, she said, oh, we could watch a movie. And I said, yeah, maybe we could have some special food and treats and stuff. And automatically immediately she was just like, I could see the little wheels turning and she's like, oh, this could be fun. And I said, and you can, you know, sleep in my bed with me because your sisters won't be there to share their room with you. And last fall, she slept in the boys' room on the floor with Anthony. And so I think that her worries were sleeping by herself. She does not like the idea of being all alone in her room. So
right.
Once she realized that it would be bunking down with me and watching fun movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, you guys are gonna have a blast. I think that'll be fun, and she'll be able to like tell them when they come back. Oh well, we did this and that and the other thing,
right?
Yeah. So let's move on to talk about food. Speaking of food, there's almost a theme from this week, which is making something from the unexpected things, maybe, or
making. I thought it was making for leftovers.
But making from leftovers. Well, mine is not leftovers.
Oh,
but,
okay.
So I'll start with what I made this week. I dislike the term, the practice of calling, like, putting a unique dish together a food hack. It's just like, hack is overused. It's a cliche now. But I came up with an idea, which I have ramen a lot. But I don't use the cheap, like, 50-cent ramen. I like the better quality instant ramen.
Fancy ramen.
Fancier.
What's the brand?
Nongshim Shin Ramyun Spicy Noodle Soup. I'll put a link in the show notes, so don't worry about it. But
yeah, do you spell that with a Q?
Try with a D. One of my favorite John Candy moments. I don't know. Try with a D. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Well, like all ramen right now, for some reason, there's a great ramen shortage of 2020. For whatever reason, ramen is hard to get. Instant ramen is hard to get in this country.
Slowing down on imports.
It has to be something to do with that. Like all the other shortages, it's got to be connected somehow. Anyway, I often make it just as a soup, you know, and you put the noodles and the packets, you know, the spice packet, the dehydrated veggies, and a whole bunch of water. I don't measure the water. I just pour as much as I want to have for soup. Fill the bowl. Put it in the microwave. 7 minutes. Boom. It comes out like wicked hot. Like it's you can't touch the bowl. But 7 minutes is a long time in a microwave. But you know, easy as pie. And
7 minutes is a really long time.
It is long, but well, the noodles are substantial. They're not like the cheap ramen noodles. They have some chew to them, some bite. I mean, they're not like the udon noodles that we get from, you know, from the the Asian market, like not like that, but they are some more substantial than the cheap stuff. And it's good and it's spicy and I like it. But I was thinking of like doing something a little different. For lately, we haven't had as many leftovers from meals because these kids are eating more than they used to.
They're getting bigger.
They're growing. Yes. So I actually have been having, you know, a little bit more ramen and plus it's getting colder. So it's not so bad to, you know, to have something hot for lunch, but I wanted something different. So I decided to kind of fiddle with what I did. So here's what I did. Sorry, I'm fiddling diddling. I took the spice packet, put it in a little bowl, added a tablespoon or so of the Tabaru Ryu, that it's the that Japanese chili oil that has crunchy roasted garlic in it that I've talked about before. And it's sort of it's actually a trend now. It's like a fancy trend. It's kind of funny. Right. I think I was on the front end of that wave, thanks to Chris and Makiba for putting me onto it. So I do some of that, some sesame oil, some soy sauce, rice vinegar, mix it up, kind of make a paste. I want it to be thick. And then I cook the noodles without the spice packet in the microwave, just in some water. And while I'm doing that, I've got some vegetables. I had some celery, some carrots. I had like leftovers from the rice bowls. So some carrots, some mushrooms. What I have, green onion, bell pepper, some onion, just a regular onion. And then there was tofu in the fridge. There was one package that was still good. The other package was not. And let me tell you, there are a few things that are as gross as tofu that is turned. Yeah, so
That one had been in there for quite a long time.
Yes, it had been. So I fried them up, sauteed them in a pan. And then when the noodles were done, I drained them. And then I put them in the pan, and then I added the paste, the sauce, and mixed it together. And it was really good. Like it was, I mean, it's essentially the soup without the liquid and some extra veggies. But it was really good. I was kind of excited because it was really simple to do. I mean, I could have, if we had leftover like pork chop or chicken, I could have done scrambled up some egg, we could have done all kinds of things with it. So I think I might do this more often. I like that, the flavors. And because adding the sesame oil and the soy sauce and the other stuff, it kind of punches it up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So that was good. I could even use like the Kewpie mayonnaise, the bulldog sauce. There's all kinds of things you could do with it. I could even do curry.
In your soup?
No, but it's not soup. It's noodles.
Okay.
Right. Because you drain off the broth that you cook the noodles in.
I see.
It's not a soup.
So it's like a noodle dish.
It's a noodle dish. Yes. It's like a lo mein almost. It's basically kind of a lo mein. But you could do it with all kinds of different sauces. That's what I'm saying. Okay. So now today we had some leftover fish in the fridge and some leftover something else. So you made something. So tell us about that.
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder there.
Sorry.
You're talking too much. Yes, we had leftover fish from the other night and leftover mashed potatoes. It's one of my favorite things, honestly, when I can like take that leftover fish that's just been sitting around.
Not too long.
No, not too long. But it used to be that when I had leftover fish, it was always sort of grown. Like, who wants to eat cold fish? And like, you hate to throw it away, but such a waste. But then I realized that there are two different things I can do with leftover fish. I can make fish chowder, or I can make fish cakes. Fish cakes are one of my favorite things. You just take some fish and some breadcrumbs and some binder, like mayonnaise and egg, and I usually add some like celery and green onions to give a little bit of crunch and some aromatics, whatever herbs I've got on hand. And, some flavorings, a little Worcestershire sauce, a little mustard, whatever. And just mix it all up and then form it into balls and then fry it in the skillet.
Yep. In oil?
Today I used a mixture of like half oil, half butter. Really good.
It's better with the butter if you can get the butter. Like, we can't, if Lucy wants to eat it, then we can't use the butter, but.
Well, except when I make fish cakes for her, I have to use like veganaise and like all sorts of substitutions because right. I can't put eggs in it either. So it's just, it's a pain.
Right. Exactly. So these were good. But you used the binder in this one was the
mashed potatoes.
The mashed potatoes, which, because mashed potatoes have cream and that's the sort of stuff in it. Wow, was it really good?
Yeah, they came out really well. I highly recommend mashed potatoes are as like a mixer for things, like when you're making cakes or meatloaf even. My mom used to put mashed potatoes in her meatloaf.
Like leftover mashed potatoes, because they've kind of the starch is setting.
Yeah.
And it dries out a bit.
Right. The mashed potatoes were really dry when you're mixing them in. Like, they really definitely need the egg and the mayonnaise in order to, like, soften them up and rehydrate them. But they cook up nice and firm, and the cakes aren't falling apart in the skillet when you're cooking them.
The key is that it's leftover mashed potatoes.
I did refrigerate it for a good 20 minutes. Like, I mixed it up, and then I put it back in the refrigerator to kind of let that congeal a little bit. And I think that helps, too, to keep it from falling apart.
Mm.
It's one of my favorite things, though. A few years ago, I read a great book called The Everlasting Meal by Tamar Adler. And it's this whole, it's not so much a cookbook as a philosophy of cooking book or a methodology of cooking, because it's really about, like, this sort of idea of letting the leftovers from one meal become the ingredients for the next meal, and then leftovers from that becoming the ingredients for another meal. And this idea of, like, one meal sort of lending itself to another meal, fish becoming fish cakes, or vegetable ends becoming soup stock, or roasted vegetables becoming an ingredient in another dish. And I love, I'm not as talented as she is, where she describes this sort of like everything gets recycled into something else. But when I manage to pull it off, I always feel a little rush of victory, like, woohoo, I managed to do it. I recycled food.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you've got a big family and you've got a limited budget and a lot of differing tastes, making the food stretch, especially when, like, I think every parent has had the thing where, like, you liked this a week ago, and now you turn up your nose at it, and now I've got this whole thing that you don't want to eat. And so being able to repurpose things is key, you know? It's like,
like leftover bread pudding, croutons, bread crumbs for binder in meatloaf or meatballs. So many recipe calls for, like, take a loaf of bread or take two slices of bread. And I'm like, I'm taking my leftover chunks of the baguette, like the end pieces that the kids don't eat. And that's what I'm using.
I love
when I make breadcrumbs for my fish cakes. I'm using, like, the chunk of, like, brick hard baguette. And I'm, like, sticking in the food processor and whirring it around until it becomes crumbs.
My favorite is the ones where it's like, okay, take two slices of you know, very nice bread that are from a loaf that you've just sliced, put them in the oven to dry them out. I'm like, you're just making stale bread. Like, just, if you have stale bread, use stale bread. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's my favorite. Toast the bread, or just use your stale bread.
Yeah, like, some of us end up with stale bread. We're not quite the shishi.
And honestly, when our kids were in the toddler stage, we don't really have this anymore, but you have the phenomenon where the kids eat, like, everything but the crust.
Yep.
Or they eat, like, half a piece of bread. I had no shame in taking those half-eaten pieces of bread and sticking them into the freezer and then using those as my breadcrumbs for meatloaf or whatever. I know there are people who would be like, ooh, icky, ew, germs.
Somebody ate some of that.
But honestly, it's going into meatloaf. Yeah. It's being cooked until the temperature is high enough to kill all the germs in the meat.
It's your kid. Like, it's not,
and,
like,
it's also, right, yeah, it's your kid.
It's like you're walking around the restaurant going, hey, someone left that on a plate. I should take that home. Dad. I don't think my dad ever did that. I hope. Yes. So, yeah, it's the frugality, the extending, and just, and sometimes it's not even just that it's frugal. It's just, it's good. Like, bread pudding is good, and having this stuff on hand means you can do it, you know, and throwing things into the freezer, like, being willing to take, like, leftover pulled pork that we've eaten for lunches, but there's still some leftover, and throw it in the freezer for that day when you want to pull it out because you're like, hey, you know what? I had an idea. I'm going to make
pasties
or, you know, something else. We have to find some other thing we can do with pulled pork, leftover pulled pork. Anyway.
Actually, I'm overdue for a pasty fix myself.
That's true.
There was something else I was thinking of that I do. Like fruit, like the half eaten mealy oranges and apples and stuff. Those cook up, like, they're gross and nobody wants to eat them. Like, the oranges that are dry and the apples that are mealy. I stick them in the freezer, and dried out oranges, become really nice marmalade, and mealy apples become really good applesauce or apple pie.
Right. Right. I mean, that's, you just, the problem is you need freezer space. And that's one of the things we're constantly struggling with, is having enough freezer space.
I want a bigger freezer.
Yes, I know. I want one too.
We have a chest freezer, but it's a very small one.
Yeah. I want a nice, decent stand up freezer to replace the chest freezer. The chest freezer is ancient, by the way. We inherited it from my brother, who inherited it from my sister. And so the thing's got to be like 20 something years old, at least. At least. So, yeah, it's due for replacement. Right. And then the other thing we did, speaking of frugality, is tonight we had pork chops. Now, these were 2-inch thick pork chops. And that sounds decadent and, you know, expensive, but it wasn't, because
this is a hack. I can't even remember where I got it from. This is kind of a hack. Like, literally, I'm literally hacking it up, because what I do is, when pork loin goes on sale, and sometimes it goes on sale and it's cheaper than pork chops per pound. So I buy this big old pork loin and I hack it up into pork chops, and I can make them as thick as I want, like the really big, fat, thick ones.
Because secret here is, a pork loin is basically a center cut pork chops.
Right. So My favorite thing is, pork loin was on sale this week, and so I look at that and I say, pork chops. Nice, so, big fat ones.
Yep. So a nice marinade. I grilled them, and they were really good. Really good. The grilling them is tricky when they're that thick, and they were still really cold in the middle. They were still almost frozen in the middle. In fact, by the time the outside was done, I took a temp on them, and they were still like 45 degrees.
Oh, my. So we might have wanted to defrost them a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, and you can always, like I was saying before, you can always sous vide them, which will bring them up to a temp. You don't even have to sous vide them all the way, but just sous vide to bring them up.
That's probably a good idea for next time, because that loin, I pulled it out of the freezer on like Wednesday, and it was still kind of icy today.
Yeah. Yeah, in the bottom of the fridge. Yeah. So the sous vide, it just will bring it. And like I said, it doesn't have to bring it all the way up like you normally would. You just bring it up to a higher temp. So then when you put it on the grill, it's actually a little easier. It worked out, because I just kept it on the cooler side of the grill. And grilling at this time of year, I've actually noticed I have to use a lot more charcoal than I do in the summer, because it's the cold air is just sucking the heat out of it. And it burns out faster. So,
Speaking of frugality,
yes,
these pork chop leftovers will become rice bowls later this week for a really quick, easy meal.
Rice bowl. I'll put it on my ramen for lunch if I want to make ramen soup. Yeah, it will be.
It took me a long time to figure out what to do with leftover pork chops.
Yeah.
But yeah, the kids liking pork chops sliced up on top of rice bowls has been...
You could do that with chicken. You could do that with steak. Like any of that stuff. Any meat, you could just cut it up.
I mean, even salmon we've done as rice bowls.
Yeah.
They like that.
It's almost like a poke bowl, except not raw. Even like after Thanksgiving, turkey would be good for rice bowl.
I like turkey with the tortilla soup.
Yes, turkey, except this year, as listeners who've been with us since then will know, I'm not going to cut the end of my finger off cutting it up.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Let's not do that one again. All right, so that's the food. We should move on to the things we've been reading and watching.
Okay.
I watched two things this week.
I watched nothing this week.
Well, all my shows are coming back in November, including the Baby Yoda show, which is coming later this week. I drive the kids crazy when I call it
the Baby Yoda.
The only reason to watch is the Baby Yoda.
No.
He is the best. I love him.
He is the best. But
I love him.
But I really love the Mandalorian.
I do too. I love the character, and I like the other characters. Like, I like Cara Dune, and Greef Karga's okay. Although the acting by, I don't have his name up. The guy, he was in Rocky. He was Apollo Creed. His acting is not the best these days, but it's okay. He's still Apollo Creed, and so he's awesome. Carl Weathers. The bad guy is also really awesome. But I am looking forward to that. We're all on tenterhooks in this house waiting for the Mandalorian to come back. But that's not what I was going to talk about. We'll talk about that next week. This week, I want to talk about Enola Holmes and The Outpost.
Enola Holmes. I've seen somebody talking about that recently.
So it's a Netflix original. Right. It's based on a book called The Case of the Missing Marquess, an Enola Holmes mystery. Enola Holmes is
Sherlock
and Mycroft's younger sister. And in this, she's just turned 16, played by Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things 11.
I never watched Stranger Things.
You didn't watch Stranger Things?
No.
Oh, you have to watch Stranger Things.
I watched like half an episode a couple times and it didn't grab me.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah. Heretic. Weirdo. So Sherlock is played by Henry Cavill, Superman, Man of Steel.
Henry Cavill?
Yeah.
Which Superman was that?
The most recent one.
The one I didn't see.
Probably. Okay. But he looks like Superman all the time. Like, he just can't help it. Even as Sherlock Holmes, he looks like he's got this cut to him, like broad shoulders, thin waist.
That's not what I imagine. As Sherlock.
Young Sherlock. This is Sherlock at the beginning of his career.
Even young Sherlock, I just don't.
I know.
See him as being.
He's okay as Sherlock. So the idea is Enola is much younger than her brothers, and her mother, their mother is kind of an oddball and raises her in this unconventional way for the late 1800s, and very, you know, she doesn't know any of the niceties of polite society. I mean, it's okay. There are a couple, fun elements. Sherlock doesn't totally get overshadowed. That's the word I'm trying to think of. Overshadowed by his younger sister's detecting that. There's sometimes that trope where the one we think is the great and famous one really isn't as great and famous as
it's Sherlock Holmes. It's not Sherlock Holmes' slightly smarter sister.
Right. Like, she's younger and she's smart. Like, they both have inherited the detecting gene, you know, that whole thing.
Right.
So there's that. But there's this whole, I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want to spoil it. I mean, it's okay. It's not a bad movie, but
was it a movie or a TV show?
It's a movie.
Oh, okay.
But there's this whole subtext of women's suffrage and the oppression of women by men, and there's this sort of modern feminist subtext that's just kind of like, but that's modern. That's not that like.
Well, women's suffrage was actually a really big theme at that point.
No. The women's suffrage thing works. That's fine. But there's a modern feminism tone to the way they do it. I felt like it was, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. And maybe this was how it was. There was actually women who were forming terrorist groups. Sorry. But like basically feminist terrorist groups trying to foment revolution in England. I won't say any more because any more would be a spoiler, but it just kind of like, eye roll. There was a little of that, but the cast was great. Helena Bonham Carter played Eudoria Holmes, the mother.
She's a great at eccentric weirdos.
Oh yes, she is. She's made a career of playing eccentric weirdos. The one of the villains, the one chasing them, is Byrne Gorman, which you probably don't recognize the name, but when you see him, he always plays like an English bad guy. He's like a classic English bad guy. And in fact, if you see his picture, Melanie, like Byrne Gorman, you've seen him. He was in Turn, the Revolutionary War.
I'm actually really bad at face recognition out of context. So
okay.
I have no idea.
Anyway, he's been in a bunch of movies. You'd recognize him when you see him in this. But so it was okay. It wasn't bad. It was the twist was, like the whodunit, I didn't figure it out till the very end.
That's surprising.
That's pretty good for a movie for me, because I mean, in all humility, I usually figure it out fairly early, because a lot of writers are kind of lazy about the tropes that they throw in, and I've come to recognize how they show you whodunit. This one they didn't do that, so that was pretty good. So that's the first one. The other one I watched was vastly different. It was called The Outpost. This was another victim of 2020 on the film season. It was supposed to be a theater release, but it ended up being released on streaming. And I watched it on Netflix. And it's based on the true story of of U.S. Army unit in Afghanistan in 2009 who were in this valley surrounded by the Hindu Kush, like this hundreds of feet of cliffs around them. Like the first rule of the military going back to Sun Tzu, seize the high ground. They instead seized the low ground, the U.S. military did, and set this outpost up so that the Taliban could be in the hills around them and shoot down on top of them.
Ouch.
Yeah, and it was the worst possible, you know, thing. The outcome of this battle for the outpost that's at the climax of the movie is that it's the first time in more than 50 years that one battle produced two Medal of Honor winners. Like two of the guys end up winning the Medal of Honor, and it's the most decorated battle. Like more medals were given out for this battle than any other battle in either Iraq or Afghanistan, the wars there.
I see.
Orlando Bloom plays in a U.S. Army captain with the worst accent ever.
not a good American accent.
Not a good American accent. I think he was trying to do British, but I'm not sure.
He was trying to do British?
I'm sorry. I think he was trying to do Brooklyn.
Oh.
But it kept coming out British. It was really bad. It was really bad. But it was a good movie. You know, violent as you expect, but so cinema verite style where the camera is running next to the guys, and you know, there's no soundtrack that I even recall, but it was just so very documentary style in that sense. So good movie. And then just as a book, I finished reading this the book and trilogy by Nathaniel Philbrick on the Revolutionary War. This one is called In the Hurricane's Eye. And it is about the end of the Revolutionary War, and the Battle of Yorktown is the climactic point. But it talks about, one of the things it talks about is how these keys to the winning the war by the Americans were things like this Spanish diplomat named Saavedra. Is actually, without him in the doing what he did in the Caribbean between the Spanish and the French, we would have lost.
Interesting.
Yeah, and he didn't have any direct role, but because of this, his key management style in the Caribbean, he managed to do that. And there was also a hurricane that shifted the way the war in the Caribbean was being fought between the British and the French and the Spanish, such that it made it possible for the French fleet to be off of the East Coast at the Battle of Yorktown. There's these interesting little things that were in there. And it also shows that, like, George Washington, who was not a perfect guy, but he was an amazing guy. You know, he made plenty of mistakes. He had plenty of flaws, but his virtues and his strengths are pretty remarkable. It really comes through in this. And how the arrogance of the British, especially the British generals, really hurt them throughout. So it was a great series of books. Are highly recommended by Nathaniel Philbrick. Between this and the books by Rick Atkinson and then the books by Jeff Scarra, in the last 2 years, I've read a lot of Revolutionary War books. I'm going to finish out what I think Atkinson has one more or two more books coming in his series. But once those are done, I think I might move on to a different period.
I don't find I can read that many books in one period. I get bored. I found that, for example, you would think that there wasn't that much overlap between John Adams and Alexander Hamilton, but I got bogged down in Ron Chernow's Hamilton, like having watched the musical a lot of time and listened to it a lot. I thought that I'd be excited about the book, but I found that a lot of it felt kind of like a repeat of stuff. Like there was new information throughout, but it just kind of felt like, okay, yeah, I've been here, done that.
Yeah,
I don't have as much tolerance for, like, it's a slightly different point of view. There's a little bit new information here, but a lot of it's retread of something that you've already. I've just like it's a retread.
Well, the thing is that these books were not retreads. I mean, that's the fascinating thing is what I'm really enjoying is learning so much new that I never knew before. Like you think, you know, the Revolutionary War based on what you've learned in school. But you really don't. Like, there's so much more to it than you ever get in school. I mean, maybe your schooling is, you know, other people's schooling is better than mine was. But there's so much more than what we get in school. And so that's what, but I am getting to the point of saturation. So I agree with you there that I might move on to maybe reading about the Civil War next. I think I might be interested in doing that. I don't know. I kind of this fascination with early to middle American history, you know, that
right.
I might work my way up through World War One into World War Two, because there's some things I want to read about, you know, about World War Two as well. So I'm curious. So that's what I've been doing. How about you?
Let's see. I'm juggling a whole bunch of books. I guess I say this every week.
Because this is you.
This
you
is
juggle.
Me. I do. And I'm in a sort of, sometimes I binge on a particular series or a particular author. But then like in between, I sort of drift around reading a whole bunch of different things. But I finished one book this week and I'm close to finishing a second one. So I'll talk about those two. The book I finished was called Between Two Worlds by Joan Lingard. And it's the sequel to a book I talked about a couple weeks ago that was called Tug of War. Tug of War was about a Latvian family who become refugees during World War II and end up in Germany because they've been previously persecuted by the Soviets. In Between Two Worlds, the family moves, emigrates to Canada, to Toronto. And I was wondering, you know, what is she going to do in this book? Well, the father of the family had got it. He's a teacher and he had got a job in Toronto, I think at the university. And unfortunately, though, he has a heart attack on the train platform, like as they're getting disembarking in Toronto. And so he's like taken immediately to the hospital. And then it turns out that the host family, because they're sponsored by a specific family who is going to put them up in extra rooms in their house, the dad in that family got a better job offer in another city. And so suddenly now dad's in the hospital and isn't working and they lose their place to live. It was very sort of intense, dramatic, a different slice of history than I'm used to. It was, you know, because it's Latvians in Canada and they really meet a whole bunch of different immigrants from the Baltics as well as from other places. And, you know, all the kids end up getting jobs. The two teenagers who were planning to finish out high school and then move on to college have to work full time instead. And the younger boy gets a job delivering groceries by lying about his age. He's 12, but he says he's 14 so that he can get a job. And eventually mom gets a job and then dad starts to get better and is able to do some translating work. And the book ended kind of in a weird place. Like it sort of came to a conclusion. They bought some land and they're going to build a house on it along with a friend who's, I think he's a Latvian too. He might be from a different Baltic state. Maybe he's Ukrainian. I forget. Anyway, he had bought some land and was building a house and they, seeing him do that, they thought we could do that too. Oh, so they save up $1,000 and buy a plot of land. But it ends like right there. Like you don't know what's going to happen. Like presumably they're going to build the house. I'm not sure if she wrote a third book in the series, but I kind of wish that she did. But anyways, it's an interesting series. It was based on her husband's experiences because his family were Latvian immigrants. So maybe she ran out of story material because his family story wasn't interesting enough after that. I don't know. Then the other book I have been reading is called The Summer Book by, I'm probably mispronouncing this, but Tove Jansson, who is Swedish. And it's a sweet little novel. It's really more a series of vignettes than really a novel with an overarching plot, but it's about a grandmother and a 6-year-old girl, on an island. Like they're on summer, they have a summer, their family has a summer house on an island, off the coast of Finland. Maybe they're Finnish. I don't remember.
In the Gulf of Finland.
Gulf of Finland.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, so each chapter is just sort of a little vignette and the unnamed grandmother and her granddaughter, Sophia, who's 6. And Sophia is like this kind of firecracker of a little girl. And she and the grandmother have a lot of spats and arguments. The grandmother is kind of old and crusty, but wise. And it's just delightful little stories about the their adventures in the islands over the summer. People come and people go. They have visitors. They explore the island. They explore nearby islands. And just really nice, slow paced. Like, I just read like a chapter every couple of days. It's not like high adventure, but I really like the atmospherics. And there's a lot about like the nature of the island. They plant things and they explore the. So sort of a little nature study along with it.
If you have your heart set on a hardcover, Amazon has it for $1,000. So what that is that's usually resellers. They don't want to take the listing down, but they would want to discourage people from buying it. So until they get
they don't actually have a copy.
They don't have a copy.
But they don't want to take the listing down because it costs.
It creates whatever problems.
Right.
And so they just jack up the price. So if you ever see like ridiculous prices on things, that's usually what it is.
Right. It's not that they have a copy that they're trying to get thinking people will buy it for $1,000. It's just like, I don't actually have a copy, but I don't want to take the listing down.
Because the paperback is available for $12.99. So who's going to buy $1,000 hardcover? Which is kind of funny.
I actually have a library copy of it.
There you go.
And I don't remember who recommended it, but somebody did.
She apparently has another one called The Winter Book.
Oh, that might be fun too.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So. Yeah. It's nice sometimes to have kind of a slow paced book, but I think after this, I need something a little bit more up.
More action. I've got some Star Wars books that you might be.
maybe not that. I mean, I'm also reading a zombie novel set in Ireland and a Lord Peter Wimsey novel in which he's fighting a drug ring. So I guess there's a little bit more action there. Actually, I can't read very much of the zombie novel at a time. It's really bleak, post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
I'll talk more about that next
think
week.
Of The Walking Dead in Ireland.
Except I get the feeling that Walking Dead has a lot more people in it.
Yeah, I've never seen it, so.
I haven't either.
Yeah. I'm not big on, like, watching zombie movies or shows. It's gross. Ugh. Anyway, let's talk about something not gross.
Yes, let's.
I do have a YouTube comment that we got.
Woohoo!
On an older episode. So, Christy is on YouTube, and she's listening to our episodes from the beginning, so she's way behind. She's on episode 24, and so she's got a lot of catching up to do. So by the time you get to this, Christy, you'll know we read your comment and replied to it. But it's episode 24, and it was titled Infinophobia. And this was the one where I was talking about my own phobia or my own uneasiness at the concept of eternity and infinity. Just the idea, when I think about it too much, it makes me, it's almost like claustrophobia. It makes me uncomfortable to the extreme.
I find this very fascinating.
I know a lot. Yeah.
It does not make sense to me at all.
Well, I am not alone. So, because Christy says, such a great episode as always. I'm an infinophobe too. I actually felt very alone about that until this episode, but Dom described my feelings perfectly. Glad to see that even though we greatly desire heaven, it's normal to have the jittery precipice feeling. Thank you so much for the show. It's been so great to listen to, especially with how negative the world around us is these days. Yes, we try to hold the negativity of the world at bay in this episode. You'll notice the things we don't talk about in our show. We know they're there. We talk about them with each other, but we don't talk about them on the show. So thank you for listening, Christy. But yeah, so I'd love to hear from other people who have this same sort of standing on the edge of a precipice, uncomfortable feeling about infinity and eternity.
It's so weird because, like, mostly I feel sort of excitement.
You're not thinking about it enough.
No.
I don't even like talking about it too much because it makes me feel like jittery. I would actually kind of love to talk to a mental health professional about, not that I think it's a mental illness, but just to kind of talk about the human psychological aspect of what I'm feeling, because I'm somewhat fascinated by it, why I feel this and others don't. Well, you'll have all the books to read until you've read them all, and then there won't be any more books to read. In infinity. In eternity.
Infinity.
Yes.
Yeah, but there's people. to talk to.
Yes, and then you've talked to all of them. Then what?
Talk to them again.
And then what? It's infinity. It goes on and on and on and on forever. See, okay, I'm making myself all jittery. I need to stop.
I think it's a limited imagination. The inability, the idea that like good conversation can come to an end.
Uh huh.
Because it's a relationship. It's about people. People are endlessly fascinating.
Uh huh.
And like all the people who've ever existed.
Yes, but that's still limited. Never mind. let's end the show before I get any more jittery. But this is very important. These people, we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Bill B, Ron T, Joseph P, George G, and Caleb B. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. What did you think of our discussion? If anything jumped out at you, you want to comment on, you give us some feedback, you can do so by going to sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. We'll have links to all the books and other things we talked about in our show notes at SQPN. Be sure to, if you can, we haven't had one of these in a long time. It would be really nice to get some more reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. Not just because it strokes our ego, not just because, but because it helps other people discover the show. When reviews get written, the algorithms push the show up into the recommendation engine, et cetera, all this weird stuff. But it just, however it works, reviews help, so we greatly appreciate that. And when you share, of course, when you share the podcast with your friends, say, hey, have you tried out this new podcast? It's really good. So that helps us grow the community and reach more listeners. So until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.